we're going to be talking about the declining of Ringgit Malaysia, right? Now, recently, there's a lot of questions that have been going around because recently Ringgit has hit its all-time low compared to 1997, right, obviously. And we are talking about 4 Ringgit and 78 cents, briefly touching 480, if I can recall.
Yeah, around that
and
level.
And then after that, 4 Ringgit and 78 cents. And many people are saying that, hey, will it eventually hit to 5 Ringgit, right?
Yeah.
And so that's the thing here. I realize that a lot of people in the market are actually very fearful that Malaysia Ringgit dropped to 5 Ringgit. But at the same time, if you were to really ask people, why are you so afraid of Ringgit Malaysia falling, right? Many people can't really articulate why is it scary or why is it a problem, right? And we just read the news and say, whoa, Ringgit Malaysia falls, then everyone just go panic, right? That's all. But why? Many people do not really know.
Correct.
Yeah. So today we want to shed some light on this matter and at the same time to share with you guys about why is it relevant and important to you all? And at the same time, what are some measures that you can take to actually protect yourself? So let's just start with a very simple thing first, right?
Yeah.
So Frankie, firstly, let's talk about what events that actually led to Ringgit Malaysia falling so much first.
Okay, first of all, right? Well, we all know that we have our PMX, which is the greatest salesman today, right? Wow, every day we see the news, he's bringing back a lot of FDI. So in normal circumstances, when all these FDI come to Malaysia, chances are they are going to come and invest in our country. And to do business in our country, you need to use the ringgit, right? So if you use the ringgit, technically speaking, the ringgit should appreciate because they need to buy the ringgit, ma.
Yep.
So what's happening right now that causes the ringgit to fall instead of rising? So the biggest challenge right now is not because our economy is very bad. It's because there are other currencies that are yielding a higher, better interest rate, and therefore it is getting a lot of attention and a lot of so-called energy is flowing towards those currency. Like, for example, the US dollar. US dollar has, you know, the Fed has increased the interest rate from 0% all the way up to 5% over, right? So when the interest rate is 5% and Malaysia, if you put in FD, is around 3% or sort of like that, right? It's not attractive. It's not attractive.
Yeah. So here's the thing, right? We recently have heard a lot of people say that, hey, Malaysia ringgit fall, right? I thought economy is supposed to be doing better. We get a lot of FDI. And yeah, by right, when FDI comes in, they are supposed to buy more Malaysian currency. Therefore, higher demand lead to an increase of Malaysian currency's value, right? Now, that's very true. But number one, we need to understand that FDI doesn't one-shot buy in Malaysian ringgit, right?
Yeah.
They go in by batches and as they pay salary, as they do their transaction, only it happens, ma. That's number one. But number two, the biggest issue that's happening around right now, it's really, really not that we think that, not that we are siding government or anything, you know. Actually, in fact, any government that's going to be here also, we're going to say the exact same thing, right? which is, it has nothing to do with Malaysia's economic strength.
Correct.
Yeah. It is purely, USD has been increasing their interest rate and other countries are increasing their interest rate significantly as well to catch up. Therefore, Malaysia's currency seem weak. As simple as that, right? Yeah.
Now, to add on to that point, right, you may argue like our ringgit, right? You say our economy is good and whatnot, but it is still falling. But if you compare against, let's say, rupiah, Indonesia rupiah, actually, Indonesia rupiah is doing better than Malaysia. So does that mean that Malaysia is really that bad until Indonesia is also doing better? Now, again, the reason is actually the same. Because in order to counter the US interest rate hike, Indonesia, the interest rate is also a little bit more aggressive compared to our bank, Negara Malaysia. So then as a result of that, the rupiah is also performing better.
Yeah, so they're also increasing their interest rate, right? Yeah, so here's the thing, right? A lot of people are asking, then why not just increase our interest rate.
No.
But here's the issue, right? When you increase the interest rate, everything also increases at the same time, right?
Yeah. Especially businesses that already have a lot of borrowings, their interest expenses is going to increase.
Yep.
Now, if they want to protect the margin, there's only one thing that they can do is to pass on the cost to everybody.
That's right. Yeah. So it means that they're going to increase the price of items.
Right.
And indirectly, all of us, our cost of living will increase. But number two, more specifically, that directly impacts us is those of you guys who actually have a property loan or a floating interest loan for cars or whatever not, right? Yeah. Immediately, what happened is your loans are just going to immediately become more expensive. Your housing installment will cost more.
Yeah.
Your car loan that's on floating will also cost more. Yeah. And the last time, as we can see, every time an increase of about like 2.5 points, 0.25%, we can easily see about 5 to 10% increase in your installment rate.
Correct.
And Malaysian, most of them can't even save 10%.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
So it's like, suddenly that can't increase, right?
But that's the reason why I think we have to give it to the Bank Negara Malaysia. Because while protecting the currency is important, protecting the people is also important.
That's right.
If you increase the interest rate too much, you are going to hurt the people. Unlike in the US, it's a capitalist economy, right? The majority of the people must survive in the expense of a small portion of the people.
Yeah.
So what they do is, they don't care, they just increase the interest rate. You know, all the businesses are suffering, the people with a home mortgage, they are suffering, but it doesn't matter. In fact, they want the economy to break so that the whole economy can restart.
Yeah.
So they have a different approach.
But when you do that, actually the rich become richer lah. That's the truth.
It
doesn't really help with people. Now, so there's two arguments, right, when we actually go into the next part of it, is that we know that the cost of this fall of ringgit is because USD and certain other country are going up.
Yeah.
And especially when our neighbor Singapore is a very strong nation that can afford the interest rate increase, right? It's okay for them. Yeah. And Malaysia now suddenly look like so terrible and bad, right? Now, then people are saying, some people are saying that might as well just increase it. Let everyone suffer, right? Just let everyone suffer. And then after that, we should reset it because if not, everything comes to zero, it is worse. That's what they say, right? If ringgit depreciates more, it is going to be worse. Must as well you just restart this, let the people who need to die, die, right? Now, when you do that, there'll be the other side of the party. They say, how can you all do that? Increasing the rate when everyone is suffering right now. Tax also increase, everything also increase. But then you're willing to just kill us like that. You're inhumane. Then how?
Well, if you think about it, right? Actually, again, give it to Bank Negara Malaysia. Now, if you recall, right? What kind of economy is Malaysia economy? We are a trading economy, ma. A trading economy means we do a lot of business transaction with overseas countries. China, Middle East, US and all that. Now, when you do trade overseas, international trades, you use US dollar, right? But because the interest rate is lower in Malaysia and therefore Malaysia ringgit is weaker, when overseas counterpart come and do business in Malaysia, because typically all our cost is in Malaysian ringgit, so our cost is cheap, then it becomes very attractive to come to Malaysia.
That's right.
So in a way, right, we are playing the card smartly. So like, let's say for example, we are playing Chow Tai Ti, right? I have the Tai Ti in my hand, you know, but I don't want to show first. So I let you know that actually my card very, 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 very lousy, man. I show you very lousy. Maybe at some point in time, then we will show the two of spades. And say, this is my trump card.
So that's very true, right? Yeah. If you actually look at the phase that Malaysia is in, okay, if we don't talk about like people's fear and everything first, right? Let's remove all that first. Then later we go into that part, right? But at this point, let's just talk about the fundamentals of stuff, right? That's the first thing that I want to point out, like what you say just now, is the fact that when Malaysian ringgit is actually low, you're actually attracting a lot of investors to come in and invest in Malaysia.
Yeah.
Right? And Malaysia at this phase, what's the focus? Yeah? If you actually look at one thing that I think they are very smart about is that they are giving you all the bad news up front right now because they know that in the next 4 years, there's not going to be an election.
Yeah.
They will do all the hard decisions to make sure that the country can move towards a direction. I'm not saying up or down. Yeah, that's for results to tell, right? I'm just being a bit more hopeful. Yeah. Now, some of them pro-government, right? But it's nothing to do with government. I'm just talking about economic fundamental. Later, we are going to move on to the next part where I'm going to explain more clearly why do I say that, right?
Yeah.
Is that we are at this phase where the nation's priority is actually improving income. And in order to improve the income of the people, you definitely need FDI, right? Foreign direct investment, right? Now, because if you look at our own development budget, you look at our nation's economy, we don't have enough money to support development. It's only a very small portion that goes into development.
Yeah. In fact, we need to borrow money to fund our development.
That's right.
That's why every year we have deficit.
That's right. And what's best, what's better than having FDI? Because it means that private companies from foreign nations are going to come in and fund the development of this nation, right? Then as they do that, hopefully, Malaysians get paid better. Right? Malaysians get paid better. Now, here's where everyone have to work together very closely, making sure that industries that they are coming in is not just talking about low wage, you know, but rather focusing on high value. Yeah, again, I talk to both sides of the story, right? You know that we have a lot of friends, right? Put it this way. So certain people tell us that, no lah, it's not that high value. Certain people tell us, it's getting more and more high value. So again, always, because we have friends in everywhere these days, right? You get a picture. So we talk to this one guy. Both are prominent. Correct. Talk to this one guy. This guy is more hopeful. Talk to the other guy, more pessimistic. Well, end of the day, I also don't know where it's where. Yeah, because... But as far as
only
I'm concerned,
time can tell.
Yeah, but as far as I'm concerned, LUM research, all these are in, right? We are talking about building a battery plant for Samsung Malaysia as well. So at least it looks like high value to me. I don't know what exactly are they going to do, but it looks like that, right? Now, then if you look at this path here, having a low ringgit will be even more attractive for people to come. Because let us not forget, Vietnam is even cheaper.
All right, we need to compete with this kind of neighbors. Now,
you can't compete with Singapore.
Correct.
You need to compete with Vietnam. You need to compete with Indonesia. Whose resources is more than you? Labor cost is more than cheaper than you. Yeah, more land than you. Everything is cheaper than you. How are you going to compete?
Only brain,
juice. Yeah. So brain, but these days, more and more people are educated also. So it's only a matter of time that it will catch up, you know.
Yeah.
So
they are catching up.
Yeah, already. Having that lower ringgit in a way kind of benefits the situation right now because it gives you another plus point to sell the country's investment prospect at this near future, right? Okay, that's one. Now, then if you look at future development, and this got me thinking, right? The other part is this, right? Like I say, Japan and Korea, and if you look at Indonesia, I'm pretty sure last time one nasi lemak in the early days, it was 5 ringgit lah. It was 5 rupee lah. Then inflation became very bad. Now 1,000 rupees, the standard rate. In Japan, it also became 1,000 yen, right? Yeah. I'm pretty sure that in the early days, they did not start with that number lah. Right?
Yeah, for sure.
So it was also this kind of thing that they went through, I believe. Right? Lower currency, things are bad, but they pull it through, bring it in. Inflation was high at one point, but eventually... with better governance and policy and better industries, they set it in place that wages should be higher. And then hopefully down this generation, it becomes better. Yeah. So that's one of my thoughts when it comes to this part, right? But on the other end, then this also reminds me of one thing. Do you realize that currency and country is a little bit like stock price and companies?
Correct.
Do you realize that?
Yeah, it is. So put it this way, right? If you're talking about the stock market, right? So the company has people working inside, to create the profit. Then once you have the profit already, then the investors will value the stock price of the company.
That's right.
So like, if you put it that way, right? Then in a country situation, the whole country's workforce is like the workforce in the company.
Yeah.
Then the people inside is supposed to work and create the GDP growth. And then the currency is like the stock price like that.
Yeah, it's kind of irrelevant.
Correct.
But what happened is that it also reflects very clearly. There's this mirror image of how investors look at stock, right? The stock price go down, not worthy, sure, die one, ciao. They'll say all this kind of stuff, right?
Yeah.
And then after that, later when it go up again, then they'll say, I should have sell. Or either, I always knew that it's good, you know, that kind of thing, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And same thing when you talk about Malaysian ringgit. I see the exact same mentality in Malaysian people where we just go look at the currency price and then we just say that, Malaysia should die when look at the currency. Malaysia should die, look at the currency.
So at this point, I think the situation is that, let's say I'm a stock investor, right? Then I look at the market. Malaysia paying me 3% dividend yield. But I look at the US, right? US is giving me 5% dividend yield. Then, 5% higher, so I go and buy. But remember, we always say dividend, you have to identify how this dividend come from, right? If it is just purely just squeezed from their pocket and paid out to you, this is not sustainable.
That's right.
But if it comes from long-term economic growth and it can pay you sustainably throughout a long-term period of time, then maybe that one, it will be a better investment decision.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah. If you actually look at it this way, right, my point that I want to make out here to the people also is this, right? I may agree or disagree that Malaysia is going to die when they say, or Malaysia is heading downwards, right? I have nothing to do with that statement. I have no opinion about that statement.
Mm.
The place that I have an opinion on is when they say, because when they see Malaysian ringgit go down.
Mm.
Yeah. You get what I mean?
Yeah,
it doesn't really relate.
Yeah.
Yeah, because a country's economic strength to a certain extent has very little to do with the fluctuation of the currency. But it's not that there's no relation. There's a lot of relation. It's just that you need to assess the whole situation. Like in this case, it's actually a global economic situation. It is not because of economic meltdown due to debts of the nation, due to workforce issue, right? It's not a case of Sri Lanka or Turkey.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's totally, totally different, right? Yeah.
In fact, if I ask you this question right now, I bet you cannot pinpoint what is Malaysian economy's problem, because there is not much of a problem with our economy.
Yeah, yeah. There is. I mean, living cost-wise, there is.
Yes, but
in terms of economic machinery-wise,
it's okay.
It's okay. Yeah. In fact, it's doing quite well.
Mm.
Yeah. So I'm not saying that you shouldn't. Now, having said that, let's move on to the next part, right?
Mm.
Which a lot of people's concern are here, right? So does it mean that you are going to say that with Ringgit Malaysia dropping, I shouldn't be bothered? I should stick on to all my Malaysian Ringgit. And when I choose to invest more in a foreign currency, it means that I have a speculator mentality or something like that. Yeah, my answer is that no. Because again, these two are very different things. Yeah, while there's a mirror reaction that we have, but these two are very different. Yeah, because you're not investing in Malaysia currency. You're merely holding Malaysia currency as a liquid asset.
It's a tool for you to buy whatever asset that you want to buy.
Correct. Yeah, so in fact, I would say that at a personal level, there are things that you need to do. Is the reason why we address that is just that we thought the statement is not a very accurate statement when people say that Malaysia is heading down because ringgit is bad. That's all.
Mm.
Yeah. It's just for that reason.
Mm.
Right? Which later we are going to definitely talk about what are some of the measures that you can take to actually protect your wealth.
Mm.
Right? Yeah. But before we go on to that, I think let's talk a little bit about the pros and cons and how it affects the different sectors, right?
Mm.
We don't have to go into in-depth of each different business sector, but let's just talk about the first thing. On businesses, how do you think this affects businesses?
Mm, okay. So if you compare it against the US dollar, I think when we say the ringgit jatuh and all that, I think we are comparing against the US dollar, right? So year to date, Malaysian ringgit dropped roughly around 8 to 9% compared to the US dollar. Now, if your business is importer business, means you import stuff from overseas, you produce it, and then you sell it again. Your import cost, everything else being equal, right, has increased the price by close to 9-10%, like that, thereabout. So and this is not helping, because technically speaking, there's no value add. There's only number add. Because of inflation, there's number add. So it's very hard for you to justify to say, hey Peter, I'm going to sell this cup to you. Last year, $1, now I'm going to sell you $5. Why? It's the same card, what? Yeah, it's the same card, but only reason is because the cost has gone up. Now, you were still going to pay, and you have to pay because it's inflation, man. But it's the willingness that, you know, yeah, this is worth it, because maybe you add another handle here or whatnot. That's why it's 5 ringgit. So for importers' business, it has become very challenging.
Yeah.
Yeah. When you're operating in a weakening currency situation.
That's right. That's right. Especially people who are doing trading only.
Yes.
Let's say you buy products
correct
from overseas and you distribute it to Malaysian.
Yeah.
Because if let's say the thing increases by about 9%, you can't suddenly go and increase the price of
something by 9%.
Yeah, by 9%, right?
Correct.
So people will really, really feel it, especially if you're talking about B2B, right? B to C is still okay. I can still increase, because the margin, I'm talking about increasing by $5, $10. But if you're talking about a business, wholesale, I'm not going to give you that kind of price increase.
Yeah. Okay. Right? So trading has two kinds. One is you buy from overseas, then you also sell overseas. I think that one is okay.
Ah, that one's still okay.
Because that one you got natural hedge.
Okay, like, depend on which overseas you are selling to.
True also. Like, because now everything is so messed up, right? But if you buy from overseas and you sell to local, the impact is going to be worse, you know.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. And so this is a bad part that we always talk about. I think for the audience, most of you who have followed us for long, you probably already know this, right? Which is the imported products is going to increase in price. This is an iPhone. You know, it's going to increase in price. A lot of stuff are going to increase in price, right? But on the other hand, there is also an opportunity that comes up from this. If you know any friends who have been working on a business, or you yourself have been working on a business, that produces local goods to replace certain imported goods. For example, if your product is an alternative to an imported good, maybe this is your best opportunity, right?
Correct. Yeah. But provided the quality must be there.
If your quality is about the same, the margin is 9%, put it this way, it's not 9% off.
Correct. Correct.
You think about it, right? If last time I used to buy a paint, like this reminds me, I have a friend who actually sells paint, coating products, right? And they are one of the very few Malaysian company that produces coating products. And most of the people using those coating products are usually using imported goods. And people use the term, you're crazy for building a local brand, because what's the point? Who will trust it? Now he get all his certification, everything. I'm pretty sure that he's very happy. Because suddenly he's the best option, you know. There's also another business, right, that I think is really interesting during this point, Wellcor. Yeah?
All right.
Wellcor, remember Wellcor, they make a hose, right? Or the piping products, right? Or the piping, industrial piping products, right? And they also JV with one very famous German company, if I'm not wrong. It's a German company. And they built a JV plant here. And the whole thing is produced in Malaysia.
Yeah. So all this is Botan Malaysia.
Botan Malaysia.
Haga Malaysia.
Haga Malaysia, but quality German. Then
yes.
This kind of business will suddenly see great opportunities. So whether you're looking at the stock market, we're not saying Wellcor stock price is going to go up because it's unrelated. Like I say, stock price and the performance of the business is unrelated. Yeah, although related but more indirect because you need the market sentiment also. What am I trying to say is that for those of you who are looking to venture into business, this is an opening that you can look at.
So to put long story short, right, if importers are the people suffering from this weakening of ringgit, right, the beneficiary of a weakening ringgit is exporters. It's the other way around. So you produce locally, but you sell overseas.
That's right.
These businesses are the ones that will make perfect money. So just to give you one very classic case study, right, and this one just happened yesterday only. So yesterday, this company called Gadang, which is a property developer and construction company, they announced their earnings. Revenue only went up by 1.6%. Okay, fair, right? But their profit almost doubled. Why almost double? It's because their power plant in Indonesia has started to commission and they are starting to make money. So when they transfer this money back to Malaysia, they're transferring more ringgit. So this has turned into a higher profit for the company.
So if you look at these kind of companies, right, if we talk about businesses and talk about investment, if you see a company today suddenly reporting a very high profit and their share price actually goes up, right? You need to ask yourself this question as well. Is it sustainable?
Yeah, correct.
Is it sustainable, right? Yeah.
Whatever go up must come down.
And this is not because of business operation.
Exactly.
Thing, no, it
exactly.
is purely by luck.
Correct. So if operational value add, that one is sustainable because you value add already, you cannot say tomorrow I don't want to give you value already. But currency go up today, tomorrow can come down one. So this one is luck. Yeah,
that's
luck.
Right.
Correct.
And when it comes to this, right, I also realize that there's two sides of it, right? If you look at the business, if it is a B2B business, then this is harder to sustain because at the moment the price of commodities and currency goes down, when people negotiate with you to buy your products, they are going to make noise. They're like, hey, bro, last time, not this price, right? But the other kind of business that could make it a little bit more sustainable is direct-to-retail business.
Direct-to-retail.
Right?
Yes.
Because if you think about it, right? If, let's say, iPhone, right? This year, when they price in the new model, they already expect
They have a range.
They have a range already, right? So with that range in mind, What happened is that it will cost more for you to buy the iPhone in Malaysian ringgit.
Mm.
But what happened is that, let's say half a year later, the price drops. I mean, the ringgit Malaysia strengthened.
Mm.
Then now suddenly, what happened is that it is actually cheaper to buy it. Now their cost to buy the iPhone is actually lower. And when they sell it to you, their margin is better. But will they ever drop price?
Very hard.
Very hard, right? Because we as a consumer, we don't feel the effect.
Correct.
And when we buy stuff, we buy by 1 unit, 2 unit.
Mm.
So you only few dollar or a few hundred, you know. You're not talking about $1 million in saving.
Correct. Right?
So therefore, for them, it could be sustainable. And
true.
Here is where, right?
Mm.
I think when it comes to an increase of
retail price,
and then and when this increase is due to a weakening of ringgit, I got a feeling after this period, they will be stronger.
Yes. Agree to disagree. Okay. Agree is because, yes, this is how retail market works. But disagree because if the product is a commodity, then it's a different story.
Okay, then different story.
Different story. Yeah. Because if you're going to sell me the same price like last time, when the ringgit was weak and now strengthened already, you still sell me the same price, right? I'm going to go to the next store because the next store also sell me the same thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
correct.
So, yeah.
Yeah. So, this, so this part, the caveat is...
The brand. You must have the brand.
It has to be a brand. It cannot be like sugar.
Sugar
doesn't work. It has to be a proper brand.
Yes.
So if let's say it's like Asus.
So this kind of stuff, the pricing is a little bit more stickier.
Yes.
Stickier because we already used to the new price already. So need to lower down so much for you.
Yeah, and it's good for them. And usually after that, it will also create a competition. Mm. I mean, it sustained a little bit longer, but not too long because as new competition come in, then they were like, oh, it's actually quite cheap now. I can undercut the price because their margin so big, right?
Yes.
Yeah. But if let's say you are talking about a business that's a little bit more monopolized or like they own most of the market share kind of thing, then... maybe that sustenance will be longer. Yeah. So I think that's one thing that we want to pay attention to if you look at business perspective.
Yep.
Right. Now, let's move on to the next part, which is on the people side, right? Now, what about for people? How do you think the fall of ringgit, if it hits ever $5, how bad is the impact to Malaysians' cost of living?
Most of our stuff imported, right? Especially our food. Food going to increase price again, right? So this is number one that is going to hit us the most. Number two, not just food, you know, our cars, our motorbikes, all Yamaha, Honda, Toyota, all these are imported stuff, right? Yeah, so all this is going
to... Hey, but it's okay, Japan dropped together.
Japan dropped. Okay, fair enough. So yeah, still can sustain over there, right? Number three, all the constructions, right? You use metal, you use aluminium, glass, all these. These are all commodities quoted in US dollar.
That's right.
So all these things is going to increase in price as well. So safe to say that almost everything is going to increase in price and that is going to hurt your wallet.
Yes.
As an individual staying in a country where the currency is going down.
So I think this is like a thing that we all know and we always talk about in the channel as well, right? Is there anything else that really affects Malaysian when we talk about weaker Malaysian ringgit aside from the fact that living costs going up?
No, then you put it that way, then no. In fact, I actually see some investment opportunities there. And the point that we discussed just now, right? So, weak ringgit, straight away look for companies that can benefit from this weakening of ringgit. Then you switch your portfolio towards that direction or skew your portfolio towards that direction. Then you can ride on this wave.
Yeah.
And then when ringgit strengthen already, then only you rebalance it back to something more neutral.
Yeah. So this comes on to the next part, right? Which I'm starting to see that in this current situation globally, with the weird situation that we are in right now, right? I think it requires people to be very sharp and be very investment literate. Do you realize that?
Yes.
Like today, if you are investment illiterate, you're really, really on the losing end.
You cannot be like during pandemic like that. Oh, one pandemic, everybody just rush for the gloves.
Yeah.
Cannot really. Because now we have a lot of pockets of growth and they're all scattered very fragmented.
That's right.
So
that's
you
right.
need to be very alert and very focused on what you want and then pick those beneficiaries out and then you can make money from there.
And it's so hard to be... I realize that these days it is hard to be entirely passive with your investment already.
Difficult.
It is difficult. You need to be a bit more active than the past. Yeah. Because think about it, right? If let's say we were to look at, like, I was just having this conversation with a friend the other day. So he actually raised this very interesting question. He said, how many wars did your grandparents see in their lifetime?
Probably one, two.
Yeah. So it's either World War II time, they were born during that period as baby boomers, or either when they were kids, they went through, say, World War, World War II, right? And for the rest of their lives, it's been pretty peaceful, you know? Over the last, like, how many years?
70
plus years. Yeah. 70 over years. I mean, there's pockets of war, like Vietnam War, but Cold War, yeah, which, again, Vietnam War was a proxy war for Soviet and America.
US.
Yeah. But it's relatively peaceful. But in our lifetime right now,
we're moving close to that direction, right? Okay, touch wood. Touch wood, but moving towards
that direction. Over the past 2 years, we've seen two wars, Ukraine, and right now, whatever that's happening in Middle East.
Yeah.
And then all the threats of war between
China,
Cold War also we see together at the same time.
Yeah.
And all these are separate war. It's not even a proxy war, It is separate wars, you know.
That's... No, and then the world is becoming more polarized. You have all these BRICS lah, you're forming new unions lah.
That's
things
right.
Like that. These are all very bad, actually.
Yeah. And it's really interesting because as I was thinking, in the past, you can see that it is a proxy war all around, but it's actually one war, which is Cold War. Yeah. But today, it is not one war. It is really multiple wars.
There's no theme for the war.
There's no theme. It's just random. Middle East.
This is one story.
Russia, Ukraine. Then, I mean, end up all will link up with one another. But maybe it is a global plan, kind of like, you know, conspiracy theory kind of thing. I do not know. But as far as I'm concerned, as the thing unfolds, it still look like it is quite, you know, like
mutually exclusive.
Mutually exclusive, with some link with each other to a certain extent. Now, my point is this, right? The situation today is so volatile that it is bound to affect macroeconomy and economy of nations. And therefore, if you're not investment literate, you only are depending on people to feed you information, or if you're only depending on, say, pure FD interest rate, it could be a very dangerous place. Yeah.
Dangerous because you don't know what's going on.
Correct.
So you don't know whether you are actually walking into a black hole or not.
Correct. Yeah. But maybe 3 years down the road, everything becomes very stable, then we enjoy another 100 years of peace. Right. We never know. We never know. Right. But if this kind of situation prolongs, it definitely will not be very good for wealth building, I would say. Earning money is totally different story. Investing is totally different story, okay? But my point is that today you need to be a bit more active. Yeah. And therefore, like for ourselves as well, definitely during this time, as much as I think that Malaysia is a fantastic place, but it doesn't mean that I'm not going to diversify my investment. I'm still going to put my money into certain non-Malaysian investment. Like,
for US stocks.
Like I said, I've been investing quite a bit in US stocks. I've quite a bit in cryptocurrency, in Bitcoin. And I buy from Luno. I'm not really like saying that I'm promoting them, but I'm buying from Luno because I'm telling you that I'm not hiding my wealth. You know, it's legal. I'm not like hiding it or something like that. It is on Luno. That's all. Right? Yeah. So my point is that I will still put money to hedge against all these risks. And that's one strategy that I've been playing with.
Remember just 1-2 years ago, I was totally against cryptocurrency, right? I'm like, oh, no, you don't talk to me about Bitcoin. Bitcoin is like rubbish.
Oh, yeah. I totally remember.
Yeah, and just a couple of weeks ago when you were not here, I hold the fort by talking 1 whole hour about Bitcoin and then saying, oh, why I think Bitcoin is going to go up, and my portfolio today, a large portion of it, it's in cryptocurrency. Just simply because the world today is crazy and I just need to move my money around just to be safe. US stocks, of course, is one of the other areas. Speaking of that, just now you mentioned about Luna and all that. Actually, there's one new, very exciting platform, stock trading platform came to us. Came to us. They want to offer our audience a very good offer. So they want us to share with them. So maybe I will take this opportunity to thank them. Right. So this platform is called Webull. Weibo is one of the main stockbrokers in China that has come out from China to look for business in Southeast Asia region, right? We know one of them is Moomoo, you know, one of them is one of them is a partnership with M Plus and all that. So this Weibo is from Singapore. They are licensed in Singapore.
Yep.
And you can use them to trade US stocks, Hong Kong stocks. But their offer for our audience is very special. You just need to deposit any amount of money, 1 cent also can, they say. You put 1 cent also can, immediately they'll give you 3 free shares.
Oh.
Each share, right, minimum $10, maximum $500.
Right.
3 shares, immediately give you. And if you put your money inside there for 1 month, you don't touch it, right, they give you another 3 shares. Also between $10 to $300. So in 1 month time, you can get at least $60 worth of US stocks. Then from there, they also have all the tools for you to do analysis and all that.
So you mean that as long as I open an account, I put 1 cent,
I get three shares. Any amount, you get 3 shares.
Okay, and then after that, if
you just need to put your money there, you don't touch, 1 month later, they give you another 3.
Give me another 3?
Yeah.
So in total, at least 60 USD.
Then I'm like, huh? You sure?
But now you are thinking like, how come I look like I don't know what's happening and is it an act?
Yeah.
Or I won't tell you because
this is not an act.
Because Frankie handles partnership these days.
Correct.
I don't really do partnership already.
Correct. So we are not acting. This is genuine. Yeah. He really doesn't know what's going on.
He handles it. Yeah. So he brings when partners approach us for any form of a collapse, he handles it. I'm actually more focused on the other areas.
BD side.
Yeah, BD,
whatnot, yeah.
You know, the development and kind of strat, those kind of stuff.
Correct.
Okay, but nonetheless. Thank you very much,
Weibo.
No.
One more very important point.
Still got it.
This offer only valid until 31st of October. So today is already 26th. So only less than 1 week only. Then this one no more.
Then why we never do any posts?
Huh? I just finalized everything only. So this one is the first time that we announce it to the
audience.
So after this, we're going to be very busy talking about what to do already.
Straight away, go and sign up for it until 31st of October.
Yeah.
When you have an account with Weibo, you get at least 60 USD.
Correct.
Yeah, but make sure you put in $1 or 50 cents,
whatever
amount.
Like,
yeah. Yeah, that is what they are looking at.
Correct.
Yep. And this offer only lasts till?
31st.
So we have a few days to go.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe we should keep this live on the YouTube so that instead of taking down, then people can see also.
Mm.
Yeah. But anyway, that's besides the point. Okay, nonetheless, the reason why I brought up that or why Frankie bring up that is because we are talking about US stock investment, right?
Correct.
And I think it's definitely a good time to actually rethink your portfolio. This is what I would say.
Yeah.
Now, some of you may be definitely the immediate question that you all will ask is this. USD so high now.
Oh.
Ringgit so low.
Yeah.
Worth it to invest in US stock or not? Might as well wait for it to fall first.
Wait
for USD to fall first.
You wait. You wait. Because time will not wait for you, right? Businesses are constantly making money. And when they make enough money, investors going to see it, investor is going to buy, and then the share is going to go up. So if you want to wait for the right currency price for you to enter, I don't know whether you have the opportunity to catch the right timing or not. Maybe you can. But personally, I am very bad at doing that. Yeah. So I don't. So if I spot a foreign shares that I think that has potential, I don't care what is the exchange rate, I just go in first. Because what I want to aim for is the growth of the company. The currency
nothing to do with the currency.
Nothing
right?
to do with the currency. Yeah. Yes.
Okay. For myself, I'm less of a trader. I'm more of a regular investor.
Mm.
So they all know every month I will put in like a couple of thousand, like one, 2,000 at least. Into investments.
Mm.
Yeah. And what I do is that every month I will just either invest in US, crypto, or either even Malaysian stock. I'll just put it in regardless of the currency price.
Mm.
And so what happened is that previously, ever since COVID time, I've been doing that. So it worked out well for me as far as I'm concerned. It just worked out well for me.
Yep.
And for those who remember, early of the year this year, by the end of last year, that we also started doing that even more aggressively, right?
Yeah.
We diversify even more. And regardless of whether it was 4.5, 4.0, 4.2.
Yeah. In fact, 4.6, I was still exchanging to US dollar.
Yeah, I just, today, I mean, not today.
A few days ago.
A few days ago, I just entered. I mean, a few days ago before the spike of Bitcoin,
yeah.
I also just put in another sum. Yeah. And after when it went up, I kiasu a bit. I put in another smaller amount. But I can afford to do that. The reason being is because I do it every month. Yes. So it's just that like maybe last month, every month I put in 1,000, this time around I put in 1,005. Like
yeah.
Yeah. So it's not that I go and chase the high, go and dump in my money, that kind, okay? So please don't do this kind of stuff. Yeah. But our point is this, right? Because today the world is so complicated, the situations are so complicated, you want to look beyond Malaysia, but in order to do that, you need to have a certain set of knowledge. We are not saying that you need to become like a fund manager kind of level. I'm not even saying that you need to be like some super trader kind of thing, right? We're just saying that you should have enough knowledge that when a friend approaches you and tells you, maybe it's a good time to invest in US stock, you can understand the logic why it makes sense or why it doesn't. As simple as that, right?
Correct.
Even with that,
even if you don't invest, it will be a good conversation with your friend.
Right.
Then from there, you can learn a thing or two.
Yes, and more importantly, right, because for those of you who do not invest in individual stocks or so on, you probably invest in unit trusts or ETFs, right? Yeah. You think you just buy and then you don't need to understand. Yeah.
Knowing all this will help you to understand why your unit trust price is going up or down also.
That's
because
right.
Because everything is connected.
That's right. Then you know when a unit trust consultant or financial advisor advises you on the matter, does it make sense or not? Yeah, because at the end of the day, right, if you were losing money on the investment, you can't say, yeah, because he recommended me something that I didn't like or whatever not. Bro, your money already lost, eh? Nothing is going to happen.
Right.
No matter how you complain, also your money is lost. Okay? Yeah.
True. So the better strategy would be to understand what you're buying into and why are you giving the consultant the money to invest in that product.
That's right. Yeah. So I would say at this point, I personally would think that it's very important that you spread your currencies or your investment in different assets that hedges against currency risk. Yeah. And myself personally, I don't like to hold too many different kind of currencies. For me, it's just three. USD, Singapore, and Malaysia. Yeah, I spread in between these three. Right? And most of it, I would say, is in US. Yeah, in the USD format. Whether it's a cryptocurrency, whether is it US stock, right? And for me, that's enough. Because that's just how it moves, right? And I already have enough Malaysian ringgit anyway for to run the business.
Every month you get ringgit anyway.
Yeah, we are contributing. We are contributing a bit to the Malaysian economy by owning a business and running a business, paying salary, working capital already.
Yeah.
I already got a lot of Malaysian ringgit lah.
Correct.
So that's how I look at my overall portfolio lah. So yeah. That's something that we would like you all to really consider and think about it. Now, this is not investment advice. Yeah, it is merely just the way that we manage our portfolio, we manage our investment. And in relation to the falling of Malaysia ringgit, we think that these are some of the things that you can do. Yeah, and this will be good as well. If let's say you're a parent, right? Like you're a parent, right?
Yeah.
How do you think owning investment in different currencies will help to support your children's education in the future?
Let's say, for example, I don't know, but let's say, for example, in the future, one US dollar is 10 ringgit. I better make sure that I start today to start accumulating enough US dollar or whatever foreign currency that I want to hold so that 20 years down the road, my cost will not be that high. Right? So that is what I'm doing. In fact, that day I was just discussing with my wife, right, to say, maybe we should consider that if we want to do our next property investment, it should be overseas already. Regardless what country, it can be Singapore, Australia, UK, China, even Russia also can. Why? The point is you diversify part of your portfolio away from your home currency so that in the future, if anything wrong with our home currency, at least I have a second currency there to stand by to help us to do that transaction for education. Yeah, so we are trying to plan towards that direction.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Having said that, that is definitely one of the things that come across my mind, right? Because recently I was looking at this UK property market.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm. Remember, we were having a meeting. We
Correct. So that's why I had the discussion with my wife.
Yeah. Sure. I was also thinking, yeah. Mm. I mean, I always knew that US and UK property are very, very interesting.
Mm.
Why is it so? It's because when I was about 20 over years old, I had a friend who actually sent his kid to study in the US and he bought a house in outskirts of San Francisco.
Mm.
Oh no, within San Francisco, but okay. It's 1 hour journey to the city center. And he told me he bought the house at about 400 over 1,000 Malaysian ringgit.
So cheap.
Yeah.
Okay.
With a garage. Okay. Wow. Landed property with a garage. So it's two buildings, right? Now, and when I asked him how much was the rental, I recall the rental was almost 50% more than the installment.
Mm. So if the installment is 4%, that one is like 6%.
4,000, I recall.
Oh, 4,000.
Yeah. Why? Because he have a garage, ma.
Mm.
He rebuilt the garage, make it nice into another room.
Oh,
they ran up.
Okay.
The house, another price. Jina mana?
Yeah.
Right?
Mm.
But the only thing is that you have to buy the house by cash.
Mm.
Yeah. And because he has a sister there, so the sister manages it for him.
Mm. Mm.
And that made me realize that overseas property actually superb. Right? But again, you need to be rich enough.
Mm.
If you're not rich enough, it's very hard to buy. If you're talking about UK property, bro, 400,000 UK pound, bro.
But today pound very cheap.
Okay, today pound is cheap.
So 400,000 is still 2 million.
Still 2 million, But if you can buy afford a 2 million ringgit house here.
Correct. Yeah, so but if you want to buy 2 million house here, maybe one thing you'll buy a 400,000 pounds there.
But the loan there is different, right? Correct. So there are ratios, kind of things.
Yes.
But I'm sure that there's a lot of magic that can be done. Yeah, ultimately, but you need to be earning at least about 20-30K a month. If you're not earning that kind of money, well, you can kind of forget about UK property or unless you're cash rich, right? Yeah, that's another story there. You have a few million, you can just trade them in, or either you can put half the down payment, that kind of stuff, right? Yeah, but I think it's fantastic. And then rental is great because rental usually pays for itself in those kind of countries.
Rental is always great in Western countries because that is their culture. Because their culture is rent. They don't like to buy house. Correct. Only China men like to buy house. So if you transfer that mentality back to Asia, then it's like what we have today. Because everyone will dream of how do I buy my house? I don't want to rent. So therefore, the rental market here is very different from UK, US.
Yes. So that's something that I also have been considering, honestly. And I think it's great because eventually, if anything...
Correct.
Yeah.
At least you have something
outside. At least have something there.
Yeah.
Right? At least you have something there. That's the idea behind it. Yeah. So, I have nothing else to add on for tonight already.
Yep.
Yeah. Is there anything else that you want to share with the people?
Nope, maybe we can look at the Q&A, open up the floor for more Q&A today.
All right, so today we'll just open up the floor for Q&A. Maybe I'll answer about 5 questions. Let's see. And we're going to call it a night.
Yeah. I cannot see my screen, actually.
Oh, wow. Today got quite many people, I just noticed. Okay. Let's take a look at it.
Let me take this question first. Weibo only for SG residents? No, it is actually open for everyone, but just that because the company is registered in Singapore, so all their transactions will be in Sing Dollar, and then you need to register as though you are a foreign investor. So it's a little bit like opening an account with Interactive Broker like that. It's similar kind of process. So it's a bit mafan in that sense.
All right. If you're looking at Australia, beware of property law changes. Landlord responsible are getting more each year. Yep. I think that's one of the things that's why a lot of times in overseas, they don't really like to be property owners as well. But China men being China men, doesn't matter.
We will comply.
Valuable tips say, everywhere got this kind of good property. You can actually borrow from bank to buy and cash flow can tank the mortgage. But in order to borrow, you need to be a high income earner. Let's put it this way.
So there are a lot more tricks that you can play when you buy overseas property. You can even think of whether you want to borrow in ringgit but buy a pound-dominated property, or you want to borrow in pound to pay for the pound property. So there are a lot more things that you can play. But of course, it also means higher risk also lah. So it really depends on, again, back to the thing that you need to be investment literate before you make decision.
Okay. If Nara Shikamura asks, if another global recession happened, how much will it affect the Malaysian stock market? I guess what he's trying to say, the next sentence, which is how much was it affected in the 08-09 crisis anyway?
Yeah. Okay. 08-09 subprime mortgage crisis, Malaysia was bad. So nothing happened to Malaysia. We were happily enjoying our life because this was a Western country punya problem. But this time round, we have all the big economies falling into economic uncertainty right now. China is not doing very well. US is not doing very well. And the problem with that is that Malaysia is a very important trading partner of these two countries. So if these two countries are not doing well, Malaysia, chances are, we will also be affected. But how much will it affect? That one, I can't tell because I don't know who will be affected and how will it affect us. But definitely will not be as chill as 08-09 crisis lah.
Yeah. Mm. I think I have another theory though.
Mm.
I feel that with the cycle of things right now, it doesn't really matter whether it's 08-09 kind, because even we are in also, we do not know already.
We are probably in already.
You get what I mean, right? Yeah. You're desensitized already, you know, at this point. Because
like
08-09 was just one subprime, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's like one subprime plus another meltdown plus another war plus. It's like, you already come to a point. Many issues. Yeah. Everything is so issue.
You don't know what's going on.
Desensitized, right? Even the market also won't fall anymore, you know. Mm. Like, market hit bad news. Affect a little bit lah. Tomorrow, it's already every day got news.
No, the market is very weird right now. How market react to news today, right? It's very bipolar. It's either a good news, react very good, or a bad news, but nothing happened.
You see, this is what I say, right? That the market is very different. Because in the past, when there was a bad news, it was one bad news. Right? So you react to it. And then after, you got all the time to think whether is it logical or not logical, right?
Just to give you an example, yesterday Google announced their result. Their profit, their revenue, all beat estimates. But their cloud business was the slowest growth compared to Azure and AWS. Share price dropped 9.5%. Why? I don't know. I don't know. I cannot explain.
See, right? So people can be very logical. After a while, you need to think. You know. Yeah. But today, right? It's like you have one big bad news.
Yes.
You thought that you can be logical. Tomorrow, something bizarre happened again.
Yeah.
Something bizarre happened again. Something bizarre happened again. It comes down to this point, right, where people start to not think about long-term anymore. It's just all about short-term gains. And that's the reason why if you look at bond inverted yield curve, it's right. Almost the same idea, right?
Mm.
Yeah, it's almost the same idea. I'm afraid of the
short-term.
Of the short-term. Yeah, that's what everyone is afraid of. So if I'm going to play in the short-term, I better just whack whatever I can whack right now. And that's why that's what we are seeing. The whole stock market is just behaving like I don't know what to say, but...
Yeah. So right now, the rational people are trying to catch up with the short-term people. So short-term inverted yield curve. So inverted yield curve means that your short-term interest rate is higher than your long-term interest rate. So now, what do I mean by the rational people are trying to play a catch-up, right? So in the normal circumstances, the 10-year rate is supposed to be higher than the short-term one. So because now it's like this, so this one is trying to play catch-up. As it catch-up, right, what it means? It means your interest rate going higher, you know.
That's right.
Again, it create another problem.
That's right. Yeah. So let's move on to the next question. Is it good to start diversifying into other countries' stock in other currencies? I think we will not say whether is it good for you or not, but for me, it fits my investment strategy and my own personal risk profile.
Yes.
So, that's what we can say. Can increase volume a bit.
Increase volume.
maybe a bit nearer to the mic. Yeah. Kessler Lee say, US economy will slow down over the next quarter, right? Because GDP came up quite high today.
The thing is, the reason why the Fed increased interest rate is to bring down the economy. But for whatever reason, the economy is very strong. That's why the narrative today in the Western country is the Fed will keep the interest rate higher for longer. Higher for longer means businesses are going to suffer, lah, but they're not dying, oh, because but the Fed wants them to die. Oh. So how leh? So it's going to be a long, long pain for everybody.
Yep, yep. Now, whether we'll slow down or not, only time will tell. Yeah, but
hopefully it slow down faster so we can end this interest rate hike faster.
Because honestly, it has nothing to do with us.
Correct.
We are just being dragged along by their policies
now. Correct.
Yeah. Lee Kok Shu say, I cannot find the October 16 budget video in Money Hackers. Is it posted? Okay, I'm not really sure about that. We're going to check with our team. But nonetheless, if you miss any podcast of ours or live of ours, it is usually uploaded into our podcast on Friday morning, right?
I think so. Yes. Yeah. Next, that means tomorrow morning on Spotify and Apple Podcasts.
So Danny Tay, just curious, what are both of your thoughts if assuming it's the other way around? For example, like myself earning Brunei dollars, would it be good to take advantage of RM conversion and invest more?
Yeah.
You are right.
Totally.
You are the exporter.
That's why a lot of foreign funds, they are coming into Malaysia to invest.
That's right. Yeah,
because Malaysia is cheap. Yes.
Contrarian, it's because Google PE too high, so expectation are higher compared to Verizon low PE. Oh, he's explaining about Google one.
Yeah.
Yeah. As CG say, do you think crypto is overvalued at this point? What do you think?
With the halving coming in April next year, with the fact that there are more millionaires than the number of crypto, and the fact that the SEC may approve a spot Bitcoin ETF, there are a lot of catalysts for digital assets in the next 12 months.
Yeah.
So with all that in place, it's not for me to say whether it's overvalued or not, but I see this catalyst and I am playing with that catalyst. Yeah.
For me personally, at the peak of crypto was
60 plus. Yeah.
60 plus, right? It touched about 60, then it dropped back down to 15, then slowly move up. Today is about 30 plus. Is it overvalued? We have seen higher overvaluation, if there is, right? But nonetheless, again, if you're looking at the overall long-term period, you really want to ask yourself, the maximum amount of Bitcoin that's going to be in the market is 21 million. It is a very big market cap today. There are multiple financial institutions and big financial institutions investing in it, holding a lot of money in it, right? Will it fail? Maybe, yeah. But if it doesn't, yeah. So I don't know. That's for your own risk appetite to adjust, right?
Speaking of crypto, right? That day I asked myself this question. Why one Satoshi is one Satoshi? Why do you need to put 70 in front of a dot?
Yes.
Then I did my own calculation. If I assume one Bitcoin is $1 million, one Satoshi is exactly one cent. 1 cent.
Yes.
Yeah.
So there's this thing that I read the other day, written by a friend of ours, right? That I thought was really, really good. If you look at USD and you look at Bitcoin, do you think USD is more stable or Bitcoin is more stable? USD more stable, right? Because one USD is always
one USD.
Correct. Okay. Now, that's because you compare to yourself, man. Now. But Bitcoin is compared against USD. One Bitcoin was never the same. It always goes up and down. Then you think about it. Let's change the idea about currency of numbers to buying power. 10 years ago, 100 USD, what can you buy? A lot more things. Today, 100 USD, very little stuff, right? But if you look at Bitcoin, 10 years ago, one pizza was 10,000 Bitcoin. How much is one pizza for Bitcoin today?
0.0000 something.
Right? Which one actually is much better if you're talking about buying power now? And if you look at the perspective of currency in the light of buying power, which is actually more stable? So do you want stable or do you want volatility now?
Alright.
Yeah. And that was something that actually kind of switched my perspective quite a bit on like going more into it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It made me realize like, yeah, I think it's okay that I cut out even bigger portion right now. Because if I look from that perspective, okay. In the long run, okay. Yeah.
But this long run to me lah, is not long enough. Because USD is since the Independence Day of the United States of America. No, this Bitcoin is just 10 years only. So it is still too short to say where it wants to go.
Correct. Yeah. So if you look
it needs more time.
Then again, right, if you look at USD from the day of independence until today, it shrinks even more, lah, buying power wise.
Yeah, lah, for sure.
Even more. Lah, yeah. Now, number two, because over the past 10 years, right, it already went up super a lot, exponentially. Now, yes. It's not enough for you to see. But life is all about investment, right? By the time you can see, can you still get it at this price?
Oh, cannot okay, deal.
Correct?
Yeah.
So that's the reason. You have to bear that risk.
Correct.
And for us, or for myself, I've already justified my portfolio. I'm doing business in Malaysia. My currency is earned in Malaysian ringgit. I can have a slightly more significant portion of my investment in USD. Simple as that.
Yep.
Yeah. So it's all about balancing between...
Yep.
Yeah, that's my thought. Yeah. I think let's pick up one last question and we're going to call it a night, right? You want to pick one?
The thing is, I cannot see.
Oh, you need to go see doctor.
Yeah, bro. I need. How about buying actual gold instead? Gold might rise a lot due to concern with the US economy plus worries of recession or stagflation next year, which benefit gold. Yeah, fair enough. Well, but the thing about gold is that you will continue to find new reserve. That's one. So when you find new reserve, it will affect your gold price to go down a little bit because it is not in... Well, yeah, lah, you have more supply. Lah. That's one. Number two is... Now, who holds the most gold, right?
That's what they say. Lah.
That's what they say. Lah, because because we never opened the vault before, so we don't know. But the point here is central bankers, lah, right? The authorities, the regulators... So all these people are the ones that make the system what it is today, right? And these people can, because they own so much stock themselves, ma, so they can somehow influence the price of this asset as well. So it is more centralized in that sense. But if you compare it against decentralized assets like Bitcoin, nobody can control it. So it is more fair in the sense that it is driven by true market forces.
Yep.
Yeah. So that's what I think.
So at the end of the day, these are our thoughts for today's episode and how we think Malaysian ringgit falling will affect you and what you can do. Now, if you like this episode, yeah, give us a like and share this episode out and follow our podcast and follow this particular show on Mr. Money TV.
Yep. Great.
See you guys. Good night.
Good night, everybody.
Oh yeah, last thing. Once again, don't forget to sign up for Weeboo's account.
Yes, you only have a few days left.
All right. See you guys. Good night.
Good night.